Today, another fine mess for Australian housing. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this is post covering finance and property news. Well, wherever you look, the news is not good for those wishing to see housing affordability relief. First, demand for rentals continues to be powered by the overseas influx, as new data from the Department of Home Affairs shows that at the end of February, the number of international students in Australia hit a record high of 713,144, whereas the number of temporary migrants in Australia hit a record high of 2.8 million. By the way, that's nearly 2.4 million excluding visitors. Or put another way, the number of students visa holders in Australia is running at around 80,000 above the pre-pandemic peak, while the number of temporary visa holders excluding visitors is around 400,000 above the pre-pandemic peak. Now, it's worth remembering that the official MyEFO, that's the Mid-Year Economic and Fiscal Update last year, based on the assumption that Australia's net overseas migration would fall to 375,000 in 2023-24. Clearly, the latest data shows a much higher surge, which is likely to continue. So, of course, the question is, where are all these people going to live? The answer, of course, is in the rental sector, competing with Australians already in situ. So there should be absolutely no surprise that the rental crisis is getting worse, as rental vacancy rates are at a record low of around 1%, while advertised rents have surged following the reopening of the international borders to overseas migrants in late 2021. Worse, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese seems to be seeking to excuse this, as he told ABC Brisbane on Tuesday that the population is lower than it was anticipated to be prior to the pandemic, and that the figures have shown that's the case because all the borders were shut for the period of time. There has been a higher than normal influx of students, in particular temporary migrants. No, you cannot dress this up as simply a timing issue. Migration is absolutely too high and is driving the property market into the heights of stupidity. Then we can also turn to the question of new housing supply. I've covered this before. The fact that the country is littered with half-completed construction projects, many of which are competing for labour and resources with large numbers of government and commercial projects, which are also currently running. This crowded out house builders as the major projects have sucked in labour and also have driven up costs. But we also continue to see more building firms going under. For example, in late February, Cubitt's Granny Flats and Home Extensions announced that it had made the devastating decision to put itself into voluntary administration. The builder worked in both New South Wales and the ACT, and according to the administrator's initial estimates, Cubitt has around 200 creditors owing $3.8 million. 120 building projects have been impacted from its collapse, and most of the 80 staff were stood down. Then in March, three companies, Rourke Projects Holdings, Rourke Projects Queensland, and Rourke Projects Proprietary Limited, that made up the Rourke's group, went into administration. Those companies specialised in refurbishment for the last 26 years, with 63 current projects across New South Wales, the ACT, Victoria, and Queensland. And five companies under the banner of LVX Global Group appointed administrators to drastically turn their fortunes around. LVX is an infrastructure engineering business that offers strategy, engineering, and project management in the building sector, with its main offices in Adelaide. And standing back, all up, a staggering 2,348 construction firms have collapsed in the past year, and there are fears that many more will fall soon. Indeed, of the 8,500 businesses that have collapsed in 2023, about 28% were in the building and construction industry, according to data from ASIC. The previous Morrison government's Home Builder Grant, which was introduced in June 2020 and handed out about $2.52 billion to owner-occupiers who wanted to build or substantially renovate a home, turbocharged the sector. and more than 130,000 customers signed on for the program, with many traders agreeing to work under fixed price contracts that soon became unsustainable as prices began to soar. So, in the light of all this, perhaps we shouldn't be surprised that the total number of dwellings approved fell 1.9% in February, that's seasonally adjusted, after a 2.5% fall in January, according to the latest data from the ABS. The ABS said approvals for private sector dwellings, excluding houses, fell 24.9% in February in seasonally adjusted terms, driven by a fall in the number of approvals for large apartment projects. Of course, this does tend to be a lumpy series, but the trend is clearly down, down, and down. Total dwelling approvals fell 28.5% in Queensland, and whilst the rises were recorded in Tasmania, up 39.3%, New South Wales up 23.4%, South Australia 15.4%, Victoria 2.1%, and Western Australia 0.9%. So you can see here how lumpy the whole thing is. But we know that some larger firms are seeking government support before they even begin to apply to build. So watch to see if they're handed cash out in the next budget. The ABS also noted that approvals for private houses rose 10.7% in February, with approvals for private sector houses rising in all the states, Western Australia up 20.7%, New South Wales up 17%, Victoria up 12%, Queensland up 3.4%, and South Australia up 2%. And the total value of building approvals fell 16.5% following a 14.5% rise in January. The value of total residential building fell 16.8%, comprising of a 19.1% decrease in the value of new residential buildings and a 0.1% fall in alterations and additions. And the value of non-residential buildings also fell 16% after an 11.6% rise in January. So we do have a real issue on the supply side of the ledger. Indeed, as you would expect, the Housing Industry Association drove the point home, saying the last 3 months of detached house approvals remains down by 3.3% on the same quarter a year earlier, and 37.9% down from the peak 3 years ago. The bounce back in detached house approvals from January disguises the continuing weakness in Australia's housing market. Recent leading indicators such as new home sales are still struggling to indicate any significant recovery in new home building. This is especially so in New South Wales and Victoria, where land costs are particularly burdensome on new home buyers. Demand for new housing has been falling since the RBA started increasing interest rates in May 2022. Multi-unit approvals also remains weak, down by 20.9% on February to record its weakest month in over a decade. This leaves multi-year approvals 20.4% down on the same quarter last year and less than half the peak of the apartment boom almost a decade ago. Higher density housing development is being constrained by labour, material and finance costs and uncertainties, as well as cumbersome planning rules and punitive taxes, especially on foreign investors. This lack of new work entering the construction pipeline is occurring alongside record inflows of overseas migrants and a pre-existing acute shortage of rental accommodation across the country. And they went on to say it is possible to build the Australian government's target of 1.2 million homes over the next 5 years, but it would require significant policy reforms, which would include lowering taxes on home building, easing pressure on construction costs, and decreasing land costs. And it will be impossible to build our way out of the housing crisis, in my view, which brings us right back to migration. And to give ordinary Australians a chance, migration needs to be moderated. Yet according to another ABS report, Australia's population of 26 million, as at the 30th of June 2022, is projected to increase by an average annual of 1.2 to 1.7% until June 2032, and then grow by an annual average of between 0.6 and 1.1% per year over the entire projection period and reach between 29.2 and 30.8 million people by 2032 and between 34.3 and 45.9 million people by 2071. And there will be 300,700 births and 183,300 deaths during 21-22, resulting in a natural increase of 117,400 people. The number of births is projected to increase to between 284,700 and 482,700 births per year by 2071. but the number of deaths is predicted to reach between 378,200 and 402,800 by 2071. So natural increases are projected to between 118,000, that's a decrease, and 104,500 people in 2071. On the other hand, in all series, overseas migrant arrivals are assumed to exceed departures, resulting in positive net overseas migrations between 9.2 million to 14.3 million in total between 2022 and 2071. And as the ABS says, the majority will be flooding our capital cities. As at the 30th of June 2022, 67% of Australians live in capital cities. This proportion is projected to increase to 68% by 2032. Melbourne, in fact, is projected to be the largest city in Australia by 2071, with a projected population between 6.5 million and 9.9 million, surpassing Sydney between 2032 and 2046. Sydney is projected to remain constant or increase from 65% of the state's population in 2022 to 66% in 2032. Melbourne is projected to remain constant or increase from 76% of Victoria in 2022 to 77% in 2032. Brisbane is projected to increase from 49% of Queensland's population to between 50 and 51% in 2032, becoming the majority part of Queensland's population. Adelaide is projected to grow from 78% in 2022 to between 79 and 80% in 2032. Perth is projected to remain constant or increase from 80% to 81%. And Hobart is projected to increase its share of Tasmania's population from 44% in 2022 to between 45 and 46% in 2032, while Darwin is predicted to remain constant or increase its share of the territory's population from 60% in 2022 to 61% in 2032. So if you stand back, you can see quite clearly more people coming into the country, flooding into the major cities at the very point where less property is being built. So you can see here the crisis is getting more and more extreme. Bottom line is this, the most significant variable in all of this is net overseas migration. If the government was serious about tackling the issues, they would be ratcheting back, not talking it higher. But of course, that would have an impact on gross GDP. This is the problem. At the moment, the overall momentum in the economy is being supported by people flooding into the country to keep the GDP up. But of course, we have nowhere to put them. Housing affordability continues to deteriorate. And that means that people already in the country trying to get into the property market are being taken to the cleaners once again. This is a political decision. It is not one that has to play out the way it's currently configured. But it would require political will, and clearly Albo is not interested in that. Big Australia, it seems, is here to stay. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.